Commissioner Fish has an excused absence this afternoon, so the other four of us will continue this afternoon's meeting. So with that, so let's take up the next item, which is 1110.
1110, authorized city attorney to seek clarification regarding order entered in United States of America versus City of Portland concerning the U.S. Department of Justice and the Portland Police Bureau.
Thank you. So to set the context for this, I want to ask Ellen Osenak, our deputy city attorney, to come up and present this item. And then I think Commissioner Fritz and I both have some opening comments, and we'll get started. And then we'll figure out how long we can stay today, because I think we have a large number of people signed up to speak.
Mayor Hales, members of the council, given the fact that there are so many members, I'll try to keep my comments brief and hopefully informative. Ellen Osenak, O-S-O-I-N-A-C-H. I'm a deputy city attorney in your city attorney's office. And the resolution before you today would authorize a narrow appeal to clarify a legal and practical issue arising from the court's order approving the DOJ settlement agreement. In this case, the United States and the city entered into a settlement agreement almost 2 years ago and filed it with the court. The Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Accountability, AMAC, and the PPA, the Portland Police Alliance, joined in the court proceedings. The AMAC and PPA initially sought amendments to the settlement agreement, but after extensive mediation, both supported it. After receiving public testimony at a fairness hearing, the district court ultimately concluded that the settlement agreement was fair, adequate, and reasonable. We had fought hard for that result and are quite pleased and have no intent of using an appeal or any other mechanism to challenge or otherwise undermine the settlement agreement. The court indicated that it wanted ongoing reports from the city about the agreement's implementation, and we agreed to do just that. The court and the four parties, however, could not agree on the proper way for the court to receive the information. The court had legal concerns about its jurisdiction, and the United States, the city, and the PPA agreed on the scope, frequency, and the procedures to be used at these update hearings. The AMAC, however, objected to the procedures that we had proposed, we being the United States, the city, and the PPA. Ultimately, the court issued an order that did not clarify those issues. The court required the parties to appear, something everyone had agreed to do, but issued or used open-ended language to describe the roles and responsibilities of each of the parties. I'd like to just describe from a legal perspective why that sort of open-ended language is problematic. And that is because a settlement agreement is a contract. And legally speaking, a contract is valid only if its terms and obligations are certain. And practically speaking, the parties to a contract perform best when they understand the scope of the obligations they are required to undertake. So this appeal is narrow because all we're seeking is clarification about what procedures should be used at the hearing, what the scope of the hearing should be, and asking that the procedures that the parties agreed to be the ones that are ultimately adopted. I'll be here to answer any questions that you all have or any other issues you'd like me to address. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ellen. Well, let me make a few opening comments and then ask my colleague who co-sponsored this resolution to do the same. First of all, I think everyone needs to understand that this whole council is fully supportive of the Department of Justice settlement. That's not just words. I'll talk a little bit more about actions in a minute. And that we believe that these changes are good and necessary. So this is a mandate that we welcome and that we as public servants are upholding heart and soul. And I want you to know that. I believe that these things are the right thing to do, whether we were ordered to do them or not. But we have been ordered, and we take that seriously. Secondly, I want to say that as police commissioner, this appeal has nothing to do with the pace or the commitment to reform in the police bureau. In fact, that reform is well underway. We've changed how we hire our officers. We've changed how we train them. We have changed how we discipline them. We've changed our rules for the use of force, for the use of tasers. And we're in the process, again, under this agreement, of adding additional oversight. We throw these acronyms around, COCO and COAB. Let's remember what they stand for. Compliance officer and community liaison. We're about to appoint a compliance officer under this settlement to make sure that there are independent eyes on the city's progress of compliance. And we're about to appoint a COAB, a compliance officer advisory board of citizens, independent citizens, who will, again, watch over this work. We're about to appoint the Police Bureau's first ever equity director. In the next few weeks, we'll be adding that one. We added one position to the Police Bureau budget this year, that one position, and we're about to fill it. So it has nothing to do, this appeal, as Ellen described, has nothing to do with reforming the Police Bureau. It has nothing to do with regular reporting, because there are all kinds of requirements under the DOJ settlement to do that reporting, and we're committed to that. This is about clarity. Again, I want to emphasize that we haven't waited to start complying with this settlement agreement. We didn't wait for the judge's order to start complying. Chief Reese is here, and I appreciate the progress that he and the Bureau have already made. This is a little worksheet, and Deanna Wesson-Mitchell on my staff has additional copies for anybody who'd like to see one, of all 88 provisions under the Department of Justice settlement and how we're doing in getting them accomplished. And it's coded green, yellow, or red, depending on whether it's underway, getting started, or being stopped somehow. And you'll notice when you go through this worksheet that every single one of those 88 items is either colored green or yellow. Now, I'd love to hear if you have any disagreements about whether that's an accurate statement of our commitment to those 88 provisions of the settlement agreement, but I'm proud of the fact that we're this far along already. So there's work to do in this community in the relationship with the Police Bureau and the city. I'm committed to that work, and I'll make sure that the Bureau continues to be committed to that work. And I'll also make sure, as a member of this council, as I know my colleagues will, that this city council stands fully behind accomplishing each and every one of these provisions. But we'd like clarity about who's accountable, and the five of us are accountable to the citizens of Portland. And that's why we think it's important to clarify this question of who's responsible for making sure that every cell on this chart turns green and that citizens in Portland know that the spirit and the letter of this agreement have been inculcated into how the Police Bureau serves our citizens. Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, just to emphasize that again, this is about the scope of the judge's hearings and who is responsible. The Department of Justice settlement says that the entire council is responsible for oversight. And I take that very seriously. We are going to do every single thing that's in the settlement agreement and more. And it's not done. It's not whether the judge says it's done. It's whether the community says it's done. We are responsible. We are accountable to our community. And until we earn the trust of everyone in our community, we're not done, whether the judge says we're done or not. So that's what we're aiming to do in this process, is for the first time, the entire council is responsible for police accountability. Previously, it was the mayor or whoever was the police commissioner, and somebody like me could say, oh, I'm in charge of parks, that's not my problem. Well, now it is my problem, it is also my responsibility. And frankly, it's my honor to participate in this process where people that I have worked with for people experiencing mental illnesses, which is what I did for 27 years before I was on the council, I want to make sure that this settlement agreement is implemented so that everybody in our community, whether it's people experiencing mental illnesses or people of color, every single person needs to be safe and needs to have confidence in our police. That's what we're doing. The settlement is the step-by-step of some of the things that we're going to do. And as the mayor said, when the community says that everything is green, that's when it's done. It's not whether we do. We're currently in the process of hiring the compliance officer community liaison. The videos from their presentation are posted on the mayor's website, and we're encouraging you, everyone, to comment on which of the three candidates you think should be chosen by the council. All five of us will be participating in making that selection. As soon as that's done, we have then 60 days to appoint the community oversight and advisory board, and that'll be we're going to meet very shortly with stakeholders to figure out what's the process for doing that. This has been a journey for all of us, from waking up to knowing that we have issues to take care of, to figuring out how do we do that together. How do we do that with the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for justice and police reform. How do we do that with community advocates for people experiencing mental illnesses and for people with lived experience in mental illness? We need to do this together, and that's our responsibility. That's, you know, I know from sitting in hearings here that you get a smattering of information. Those of you who arrived on the dot at 3 o'clock would have seen that we just had a very long design review hearing. It was very long, but it wasn't very long because the Design Commission had worked on that project for a year and had three hearings with multiple different iterations of back and forth. There's no way that I, as the person sitting in this seat in a hearing, can hear all of the issues that are related to a particular challenge. And so this is not a one hearing a year, although let's be clear, we are going to comply with everything in the judge's order, including the annual hearings. So moving forward, that's not at issue either. We're just seeking clarity on what then does the judge have the authority to do and not do. But for right now, and probably for the first annual hearing, he's going to do whatever he wants because it's not going to get to the court agreement by that point. So we are going to be implementing the settlement as approved by the judge. And I want everybody to understand that we're not saying let's go back to the drawing board. We're saying we're going to do it, and it's my responsibility to do it.
Commissioner?
Would it be okay to ask Ms. Ozanak back up to discuss some,
sure.
to Come clarify on, some additional points? So one thing I just want to discuss a little is this case is technically the United States of America against the city of Portland. It's the Justice Department against us, and we have an agreement with the Justice Department. And they will be monitoring our compliance with the agreement, will they not?
Yes, that's right. We entered into what the United States and the city both considered a novel, and we hoped to be sort of a new model for the national litigation, where the DOJ is the monitor and the community is sort of co-monitoring with the DOJ. So yes, we have an agreement with the Department of Justice that is unique in that they are the monitor along with the community.
And if they think that we are not complying with the agreement, then they can go to the judge and tell him to, kick us and get us into compliance.
That is the model. Maybe not kicking, but yes, that is the model of court oversight and enforcement.
So, normally judges and juries hear evidence to resolve disputes between the parties. So one thing I don't understand about Judge Simon's order is that he seems to be contemplating a proceeding where evidence would be presented even if the Justice Department hasn't come forward and say they don't think we're complying. So I'm just trying to figure out what would that evidence be about.
That's one of the questions that we have is that Judge Simon was not clear about that. The court was not clear about the purpose of the proceedings because, as you point out, typically court proceedings are adversarial in nature and evidentiary. And he indicated that was not his intent, but in the order he included language that would have required adversarial evidentiary type proceedings. So that's an issue that we're seeking clarity on because that is not a normal or typical judicial proceeding and is what also prompted the court's initial concerns about its jurisdiction to even have a proceeding like that.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions or comments, Mr. Saltzman? Okay, Ellen, obviously we'll probably have more questions for you as we proceed. Now we have a large number of people signed up. I think we're going to start out with 3 minutes and see if we can ask people to be succinct. And if someone has already covered your points, please don't feel that you have to completely reiterate them. But we're going to try to give everybody a chance to have their say here. So let's take the first three signed up.
Okay. We have 21 signed up altogether.
All right. That's manageable.
Would the first three please come up? Dr. Leroy Haynes, Dr. T. Allen Bethel, and Reverend Kate Lohr. They'll be followed by Dan Handelman, Mark Kramer.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Okay.
Dr. Haynes.
To the Honorable Mayor Charlie Hills, distinguished members of the Portland City Council, the last 10 years, the Obama Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform has led the major effort for police reform and police accountability in the city of Portland. We have march, picket, held rallies, forums, participated in a variety of city boards, commissions, and task groups through several mayors of the city. History has placed us now at a pivotal moment in the settlement agreement forged by the Justice Department, the city, the police union, and the AMA coalition. Federal Judge Michael Simon ruled in favor of the U.S. Department settlement agreement that included a change and that mainly a limited annual review, where in terms the progress or the non-progress of the issues and points of the agreement would be reviewed. Both the city attorney office and the police union filed motions to eliminate the federal judge's limited annual review. Judge Simon rejected the city and the union motions. Now we stand at a crossroad in our city with a resolution to appeal the mandate of the judge, ruling to have only an annual limited review of the settlement agreement. This appeal, according to our own lawyer and civil rights litigant, has the potential of stalling, delaying the whole settlement agreement. Furthermore, it does not represent the direction where the majority of the stakeholders and the citizens of Portland want to go. Our citizens want comprehensive police reform and accountability now, not later. We do not want an appeal of the Ninth Circuit to negate the limited annual review by Judge Simon. There's a need here for transparency, wise judgment, doing what's right, not politics as usual. In light of the Ferguson, Missouri, and the Michael Brown case, police accountability has become a national urgent issue in every city in America. We have an opportunity to become a model for America. Don't pass this historical moment by politics as usual. If we want clarity, ask the judge in a letter. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bethel, welcome.
Good afternoon, Dr. Tialan Bethel, President Albino Minister Alliance, Mayor Charles Hales, and to our fellow commissioners who sit in this evening. I'm come to really say I agree with everything that Dr. Haynes has said. A couple of things that trouble me with this appeal. Number one is the timing, or you might say the lateness. That we had an appeal, we had an agreement agreed upon, we signed it, we celebrated it, and now later we come back and appeal and say, we don't understand it. I do not understand what the judge is requiring or asking to be done to bring in a report, which is a part of reporting that's a part of the agreement anyway, that it is adversarial in its nature. I believe that the judge made it very clear that he wanted to have this brought before, and what he would be able to do would be to ask any questions, particularly of the DOJ, to say, well, if the city is not in compliance in here, what do you plan to do in order to have the city come and work towards being in compliance? I still don't understand how we've got an interpretation. I'm not the legal mind. I just happen to have a community mind, you might say. But I still don't get adversarial. I don't believe that we have been adversarial in most of these proceedings as we have gone forth. So I want to encourage the council today to do not approve moving forward with this limited appeal. And let's seek some way in which we can present the evidence, and I don't want to use the word evidence, let's present the achievements of obtaining the objectives or the goals of the settlement agreement and the 88 things that you have listed that are in green or in yellow that you would give the community, as you said, the community must say they're in the green. Give us an opportunity to say that they're in the green. To my knowledge, we've not had that opportunity yet to say that they're in the green. In fact, some of the directives that were to be given to us prior to being posted have been posted, and we've had to ask for the directives to come. So I want to encourage you, do not approve this limited appeal today. But let's go with the spirit of that agreement. And in the annual meeting that's come, let's present the reports of the progress made or the non-progress made and see if we are fully in compliance, working towards compliance, or out of compliance. And then we take the necessary steps from there to continue to move forth with accountability, working together as a city and as a community to achieve a better Portland for all of us, to be safe, to go home at night, to live responsibly, and to celebrate the great city in which we live in. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Lohr, welcome.
Mayor Hales, members of the City Council, my name is Kate Lohr. I'm the Social Justice Minister at First Unitarian Church. I have other leadership roles of which you are well aware. Today, however, I'm speaking as a clergy person who cares deeply about the people in our community. Let me first acknowledge the significance of this moment in history, that the City Council, the Police Bureau, and the residents of our beloved city are wrestling with very difficult issues concerning how to be in community with one another. It took a long time and a lot of work to get to our settlement with the Justice Department. And although many of us see it as less than ideal, it's a great step forward towards the healing of our city. I'm testifying today because I believe your proposed appeal represents a giant step backwards in the healing process of our community, because it's not happening in a vacuum. We all know that police issues are and trust issues with the police are happening in many segments of our community, not just the mental health community. We have the communities of color, persons who are economically disadvantaged, homeless people, non-English speakers, sexual minorities, the list goes on. And it's not just here in Portland where those trust issues exist. It's all across the country. Just think about Ferguson's Mike Brown, New York City's Eric Gardner, Florida's Trayvon Martin, and back here at home, Portland's Aaron Campbell. The ties and similarities are very real and raw for us. We see similarities with groups that regularly incur excessive use of force by the police, regardless of where they live. It's called institutionalized bigotry. It's hard to see, but it's always there. And I'd like to respectfully suggest that an all-white city council may not be able to see it as well as others. You say that the appeal is necessary to gain clarity on the settlement and that there may have been a violation of the separation of powers. I respectfully remind you that the judiciary serves the crucial role in checks and balances in this country. In this case, Judge Simon and the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition will get to ask you questions, just questions. No one gets to introduce evidence. No one gets to cross-examine you. Given your repeated claims that the City of Portland is in compliance with the settlement and that you're repeatedly promising us transparency, I must ask, what then are you afraid of? And is that fear really worth damaging the healing that's taking place in our city? I respectfully ask that you take this resolution off the table. If that is not possible, I would ask three things. That you adopt a position and make it clearly public that protects Judge Simon's ability to serve as a third-party overseer. Two, protects the authority of Judge Simon to call the parties to the lawsuit into his courtroom. And three, protects the AMA Coalition's ability to exercise their privilege as part of their enhanced amicus status. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Law, just as a point of clarification, my understanding is that Judge Simon wrote that the parties were to present evidence. So,
no, that's not my understanding.
That's incorrect.
Actually, the order says that, I'm sorry, but the order says that, actually it's very short, or this portion of it, orders the parties and the COCL to appear before the court of periodic hearings to be held approximately annually, unless otherwise ordered by the court, to describe to the court the progress being made towards achieving substantial compliance with all provisions of the settlement agreement and any obstacles or impediments toward that end, to respond to the court's questions on these issues, and to present evidence on these issues as so directed by
the court.
Well,
that's the COCL, not the city council.
Right.
But, I mean, but the court is saying, but the Judge Simon is saying that he can call on us to, through the COCL, to present evidence.
Well,
and that
I will,
is actually
I the think this is a great time to bring concern. Up our lawyer who can address that.
Yeah.
Much better than Ken
because
Lee.
That can be interpreted a variety of ways.
And what we're seeking is clarification.
Interpretation is a report.
Well, one of my concerns has been the interpretation thus far. In fact, you know, the fact that we never talk about race, there are many things that are a concern of me, and that's why I think we actually need Judge Simon's involvement in this way. And I think that's why the trust issue is so pressing right now.
Ma'am, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next three.
Next three are Dan Handelman, Ashley Albies, Mark Kramer. They'll be followed by Becky Strauss, Charles Llewellyn, and Debbie Iona.
Dan, I think you're first.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and members of council. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. I'm also a member of the steering committee of the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, speaking on behalf of Portland Cop Watch today. Portland Cop Watch urges a no vote on the resolution that would authorize the city attorney to partially appeal the judge's order on the U.S. Department of Justice settlement agreement. We're appalled at the city's efforts to backtrack on the judge's order. When the judge's ruling came down on August 29, the city's response was they were excited to move forward. It is clear that members of the community, particularly the African-American community and people with mental health issues, do not trust the city to take care of itself. Were that possible, we would not be engaged in this ongoing struggle for police accountability, and the DOJ would never have come to town and investigated the Bureau. By filing an appeal about the judge's authority to merely ask questions about the implementation of the settlement agreement, the city is showing it is not truly committed to making the reforms. Judge Simon pointed out during the court process that city council members may come and go, but as a lifetime appointee, he can keep tabs on the process whether it takes 2 years, 5 years, or 10 years. It's not clear why the city has to file an appeal to get the answer to the question they're allegedly asking, which is, what does the judge mean when he says the parties to the lawsuit will present evidence that the judge requests? They could simply ask the judge that question without creating more legal proceedings to tie up city funds. Also, the resolution allows broad discretion for the city attorney to follow up, meaning that the narrow issue could be turned into something that calls the entire settlement into question. Community members were not at the table when the city and the DOJ hammered out the agreement. Despite 1.5 days of testimony urging him to strengthen the terms of the agreement, the judge did not order the city to make any changes to the substance. The one piece of the overall picture that was created because of the community demands is a requirement for these annual hearings. Please don't take that away from us. In addition, the discussions leading to this resolution, the cost to file an appeal, and the legal and political work following up in court are all taxpayer time and money better spent on actually making changes to the Bureau. The consensus among people in the community we've talked to is that the city appears to be circling the wagons and trying to find a way to avoid even the limited outside oversight the judge can provide. The community members who've suffered long at the hands of the PPB deserve better. And on the note of that table of the 88 items, no, the Police Bureau has made that checklist themselves. There's been no outside review of that. So we are looking forward to the COAB, the COCL, and the DOJ looking at that and making sure that those things are actually being implemented the way that they're intended in the agreement. And finally, I just want to remind Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fritz that we've passed the 30-day timeline on the JTTF that we were going to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is
hearing from us on that.
Thank you. Just to clarify, the compliance officer community liaison will be doing quarterly reports, which we haven't yet discussed, but we could easily have those be quarterly reports to council. We have those for the technology oversight committee, so I don't see why we wouldn't want to for this very important issue. We are also intending to have annual hearings before council, because the council are the members who can apportion the budget, make the changes, do the accountability, the oversight, and we are your elected representatives. So yes, you can. I think the point about Judge Simon being appointed is an important one. We are accountable to our electorate, directly to our electorate. But absolutely, we are planning to have not only the hearing before Judge Simon while this is worked out, but also, and probably more importantly, annual hearings here at Council.
Mr. Handelman, a question. If you think that the city is not abiding by the agreement, can't you contact the Justice Department and tell them that we're in violation? And if they agree, can't they go to the judge and try to bring us into compliance?
Well, I don't know if I can do it as a member of Portland Cop Watch. Maybe the AMA as an amicus curiae might be able to do that. Members of the community, maybe we have the ability to contact them. But they don't necessarily have to respond to us. So the question here isn't really that whether you're complying with it and we want to complain about it, because the agreement allows for the DOJ itself to call you into the court. The question is whether or not the city's going to let the judge ask questions on a yearly basis. And that's all he wanted to do. And we want to have his ability to ask questions that may not be raised or answered at a city council hearing, because we ask you questions all the time, and a lot of the times we don't get the answers when we ask them. But when he asks a question, you're going to have to answer the question.
But wouldn't his questions be about whether we're abiding by the agreement? And if we weren't abiding by the agreement, since it's with the Department of Justice, don't you think that they would be coming to him and saying they don't think that we're abiding?
Well, this is where I hope that we can hold the council members who've talked to this issue to their word, then that the community will be judging whether or not the compliance has happened. Hopefully the community's voice will be heard through the AMA coalition, because they're the only community members with a seat at the table at this point in the courtroom.
But there'll be more members seated at the table once we have a COAP.
But they don't have access to the judge.
They have access to the council and to the DOJ. That's kind of the point we're at here. We've got an agreement.
We've got an agreement.
I'm not clear why the judge needs to be involved, because the DOJ can take us back into court if we don't.
If it was in their interest
and
to do it.
Essentially, we are now on probation. We're parolees. We've got this agreement. The DOJ is talking with us about compliance. You know, when are you going to get the COCO hired? What's the process for the COAP? That's a conversation I had just this past week with Department of Justice staff. So that's the process we're in right now. We are accountable to the Department of Justice as well as to our community. It's not clear to me what the extent of the judge's involvement is, and that's why I'm interested in finding out and having it written down.
Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Novick, my name is Ashley Albies. I represent the AMA Coalition. I'm the lawyer that they wanted to call up here to respond. So initially, I do want to respond to your comments, Commissioner Fritz. From my perspective, I think that the court, Judge Simon, he found that the agreement is procedurally fair, adequate, and reasonable. But he sat through a day and a half of the fairness hearing from community members about their concerns about this agreement. And some of those concerns included concerns about access to the Department of Justice and the Department of Justice's response to the community. So I presume, or I have the sense, that one of the concerns that Judge Simon is trying to address with the order that he issued is these community concerns and having this agreement be fair, adequate, and reasonable, both substantively and procedurally, and giving the community that came out in full force to testify about their concerns about this agreement, to give that community the sense that he's also monitoring this, he's going to make sure that it's being implemented. And yes, the Department of Justice is the ultimate arbitrator under the agreement to determine whether or not the city is in compliance, and they can bring the city into court. But the court clearly thought that that was not enough, and that there needed to be an annual hearing instead of these quarterly reports, or he might not hear, as he stated in court to the parties, that he might not hear anything for years, and wanted to make sure that this was proceeding adequately. And I think his response to the community concerns that were addressed in that fairness hearing was to adopt the order that we see. And I would like to raise the point that It was briefed in our briefing in the Department of Justice briefing that we don't think that this is ripe for appeal. And if it's not going to be appealed, if it's not ripe for appeal, then what happens is a writ of mandamus or prohibition according to the resolution that you're looking at here today. And the U.S. Supreme Court has described a writ of mandamus as a drastic and extraordinary remedy for really extraordinary cases. And I would posit that going to these annual hearings are not something that calls for this drastic and extraordinary remedy. If the city would like clarification on the language of the order, I would suggest that the proper way to deal with it is to ask the court for clarification. That can be done in a letter, in a motion, in a hearing with the court. And I'm sure that Judge Simon would be happy to answer those questions and provide additional clarification. I'm going to defer to Mr. Kramer. Thank you.
Mayor Harrelson, a member of the council, the Portland chapter of the National Lawyers Guild has been working on these issues of oversight for more than 25 years. In 2000, we were part of Mayor Katz's work group. More recently, we were part of Mayor Adams' stakeholder group. Our colleagues were representing the AMA Alliance. Ms. Albies has just testified. I testified at the fairness hearing before Judge Simon at length, and we urged Judge Simon to reject the proposed settlement because it failed to address the larger issues of race and oversight in the city. And after the fairness hearing, Judge Simon asked for further input, and we specifically proposed an amendment that the COCL be empowered to report not only to the parties and to the council, but to the court, without having to vet his or her perspectives with the parties. While the court's implementation order didn't include that recommendation, as you know, it did require this other obligation of the city to appear at periodic hearings. Now that the agreement has been ordered, the Guild supports the agreement, but only if it's fully and fairly implemented in a transparent manner with appropriate public and judicial input, and that would be a very positive step for Portland. We think that this resolution is reckless and not supported and not with merit. We're dumbfounded as to why this challenge is being considered. The agreement already provides for public input and public participation, and Mr. Mayor, you said you're committed to transparency. Why would the city challenge a public session before Judge Simon to assess implementation issues? The judge could have appointed a special master. The judge could have ordered the parties back to the table. Instead, after a day and a half of hearing, and hearing me and other members of the community, I think the court felt compelled to stay involved in a neutral and professional and a judicial manner, and that's all that the order requires. He's already acknowledged his function is to listen and to solicit information. He's already acknowledged he lacks the power to order the city to do anything. I want to give you some specific suggestions before you take this reckless step. Number one, write the judge a letter. Number two, we do this all the time. We ask for a conference among the parties and the stakeholders, or at least among the parties and the AMA. Number three, wait until an issue arises. There'll be an agenda perhaps for the hearing. If there are any issues or friction that comes up at the hearing, the judge says, I want X, Y, and Z, the issues can be raised then. Your Honor, we don't think we can comply. Maybe the judge, maybe PPB is going to report, the COCL is going to report. We had 10 incidents in the last year in which excessive force or force was used with mentally ill. Maybe the judge says we'd like to see the reports. Maybe the judge says we'd like to see the use of force reports. Why are we bringing up this issue now? I want to close. Commissioner Fritz, you said it was important to you that we earn the trust of the community. I can tell you at this point, you, the council, does not have the trust of the community. This is a step backwards in transparency. The community sees this as putting a public process behind the cloak of secrecy. So I urge you to explore other alternatives before you take this step.
Thank you. Questions? Thanks very much. Okay, next, please.
Next three. Becky Strauss, Charles Llewellyn, Debbie Iona. They'll be followed by Chris Lowe, Jason Kafoury, Mary Ng.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. Becky Strauss on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to chime in. I want to echo many of the comments before me and just note that we also urge you to vote no through cycles of revisions to the settlement agreement and public testimony as to how it should be crafted. We advocated repeatedly for a court oversight of its implementation. the COCL role is a very important one, but it's not enough to achieve true oversight because that position carries no authority to bring the parties back to court. We support the middle ground that's been discussed that Judge Simon ordered. It's not all that we asked for by any means, but it is something for the community to point to believe that police reform will happen. So much of the people's relationship with law enforcement relies on these intangibles, like perceptions of safety and trust in our officers. And our concern is that right out of the gate now, we have a perception, whether it's real or abstract, legal or not, that the city and the Bureau will not be held accountable for implementing the settlement. We see this action as a concerning step, and we urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mayor Hales, City Council members, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this important topic of whether or not it is in the best interest of the citizens of Portland for the City of Portland to deviate from the terms of the current settlement agreement. My name is Charlie Flewelling. I'm a law clerk with Disability Rights Oregon. Disability Rights Oregon is the nonprofit protection and advocacy agency for people with disabilities in the state. DRO appreciates that the City of Portland and the Portland Police Bureau entered into this settlement agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice and the Albina Ministerial Alliance for Justice and Police Reform. This averted a lawsuit against the City of Portland, the heart of which would have been that the Portland Police Bureau used unconstitutionally excessive force on citizens of Portland with or perceived with mental illness. Judge Simon has ordered the City of Portland to appear, it looks like, once a year to discuss the status and progress of the settlement agreement with a neutral party. Having a neutral party observe the status of the agreement allows for genuine police quality assurance. The city has contested this provision. In order for there to be some measure of transparency for the citizens of Portland, it is imperative that this provision remain. One of the concerns that the U.S. Department of Justice has, as well as our clients, who are people with disabilities, is the lack of trust amongst the citizens of Portland and the Portland Police Bureau. Let's not hide behind clarification of a narrow legal issue to escape this previously agreed upon transparency mechanism. Let's instead work towards breaking down the us versus them mentality that exists between the citizens and the police by supporting transparent oversight of the settlement agreement. I appreciate your time and your attention to this matter.
Thank you. Debbie?
Okay. I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. The League has been closely involved in issues related to Portland's police oversight system since the 1980s. We provided detailed comments on the Department of Justice settlement agreement and testified at the fairness hearing. As an organization that places a high value on government transparency and accountability, we applauded Judge Simon's insistence that the parties to the agreement appear before the court on a regular basis to report on implementation and respond to questions. These periodic reviews will provide useful occasions for the City and Department of Justice to share progress reports not only with the court, but also with the community. We encourage the City to take advantage of this process with Judge Simon and view it as an opportunity to inform the public and demonstrate that it is holding itself accountable to the terms of the agreement. Regular reporting and responses to the court's inquiries should build trust in the city's efforts to remedy the police bureau's previously documented deficiencies in its interactions with individuals with mental illness. We question the need for the appeal and urge the city to continue to move forward on implementing the agreement, including participating in the court's annual reviews. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next three are Chris Lowe, Jason Kafouri, Mary Ng. They'll be followed by Ben Pickering, Michelle Munt, and Lightning.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking our testimonies. My name is Chris Lowe. I'm here representing Portland Jobs with Justice. Jobs with Justice is a community labor coalition of over 90 organizations and several hundred activist advocates for improve working conditions and living conditions for working people and for social justice. Jobs with Justice has a long history of standing in solidarity with the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. In that long history, our observation is that the city of Portland is not trustworthy, that the city of Portland has repeatedly sought to avoid accountability to the community about policing. It has had rhetoric about community policing that has not been really seriously attempted at any kind of implementation since the mid-1990s. So in that kind of context, the reason there's a settlement agreement is because the city was forced to make an agreement by a lawsuit. So we don't trust the city council. I'm glad that you all have that responsibility now, and it's not just the mayor who has an institutional relationship with the police bureau. That's good. But I don't trust you, and I don't think the community trusts you, and I think if you're going to frame it as an issue of community trust, you have to understand that Judge Simon is part of the structure that enables us to trust this settlement a little bit more. If you take Judge Simon out of the picture or reduce his role, you are reducing our trust in you, and you are demonstrating again a repetition of this culture of seeking a lack of community accountability and upholding a culture of impunity within the Portland police. So when I listen to you talk today, I hear two things. I hear, on the one hand, an argument, we're seeking to be bigger than the settlement. We really want the community to trust us. And then on the other hand, I'm hearing these really niggling little legalistic arguments and a really bizarre thing saying we want clarification, but we want it by a legal appeal to a higher authority rather than asking the party that's not clear, in your view, to actually clarify. So an appeal is the wrong route to get a clarification, as the legal people have said. It's also that way in the eyes of the community. So I really urge you not to make this appeal, to seek your clarity through a proper channel of going back to the judge, and be open in the process, and let us have this neutral party to help us have confidence in you. If you want to build the trust, it's a process, and you're taking the very wrong first step.
So, Chris, may I just ask you for clarification? You said that we shouldn't take Judge Simon's role out of this. What do you see as Judge Simon's role? We have this annual hearing. The community says this has been done, this hasn't been done. What then does, in your mind, does the judge do?
Judge Simon has a role of asking you questions as a person to whom you feel more compelled to respond than you do to the community, because the city has failed to respond to the community for decades.
So then we respond to the judge, and then what?
Then there will be at least more information on the table with which to pursue the struggle for wider police accountability and better reform. I actually think, though, you should see it as an opportunity. This is, as has been said, this is a public setting in which you will have a chance to engage with the leading organization for police accountability and reform, engage with the Department of Justice, engage with the Police Bureau before a neutral body. You should take advantage of that to build confidence in the city beyond the Police Bureau as committed to this kind of accountability.
Yes, but then what does the judge do? Does the judge say, yes, you're good, no, you're not good? And if it's no, you're not good, then
what? You should ask the judge that before making an appeal to a higher court that could constrain the entire process and just bring the whole thing down that you're
just
trying to
accomplish. Clear, we are going to do those annual hearings. We are not going to stop doing everything.
But if you're restraining the judge's role to ask you questions, then
it doesn't, until it gets heard by the court, we're going to do exactly what the judge said.
But after it gets heard by the court, I don't understand what you object to. I don't understand why you don't want to be able to present information to the judge in this public setting and even evidence in this public setting. I don't understand why it needs to go to an appeal, why you can't just ask the judge. And the point I'm really making here is you have to choose between this legalism and public trust. You can pursue the legalism, and that's fine, but then you're abandoning, you're seeking for public trust.
The purpose of the settlement was to reach an agreement between the Department of Justice, the city, the AMA Coalition, and the Police Association on what is it going to take to fix the problems that the DOJ found. So those are the parties to the settlement. Having this additional oversight by the judge means that we really don't have a settlement.
You agreed to that in August. You agreed to what's there now, and now you're appealing it. That, you know, before anything has happened.
No, Mr. Lowe.
That's right.
We agreed that we would have an annual meeting, but we did not agree that there would be a procedure where the judge could decide to ask the parties to produce evidence. A question I have for you, though, is I understand you don't trust the police, you don't trust us. Do you distrust the Federal Justice Department?
Yes, let me put it this way. I want as many institutional means by which the community can have a voice to exist as possible. If you're cutting out one of those means now, or you're reducing its scope, the Justice Department will be responsive to some kinds of things. It won't be responsive to others. This fits to me the pattern of the Portland city toward these whole sets of issues for several decades, which is to limit the structures and processes by which the community can hold the police accountable. And you're doing that again. And, you know.
So do you think that the judge's role should be in part that of a prosecutor?
I don't see that in what is in what you're contesting, or I guess you're contesting.
So are you afraid that the Justice Department won't enforce the agreement against us and we'll be in violation, but they won't see that, and it'll be up to the judge to decide on his own that we're in violation and go after us?
I am afraid that the Justice Department will not recognize the Albina Ministerial Alliance for Justice and Police Reform as having the legitimate voice it should have, and that the Judge Simon has recognized and has built into the setting.
Jason Kafori, the law firm of Kafori and McDougal, and also representing the Oregon Progressive Party. I think you need to reverse the questions that you're asking to us and ask yourselves the question of what's the harm in having this hearing with the judge every year where he has the power to ask questions? And an appeal, I mean, everyone has already said this, but an appeal can take years and years. And I don't understand why the first step wouldn't be seeking a clarification from the judge of how these hearings are going to go and what role he would have. It just doesn't make sense to go and take all the resources of the city's attorney's office and file an appeal and go that route without at first trying to resolve it at a lower level. That's point number one. Point number two is what is the basic problem with this appeal, and I think most of the citizens' eyes, is that it looks like the police and the police union are driving the ship in terms of policy and not the city council. And, you know, we've seen this over and over again. Even when juries come together like they did a few weeks ago and rendered the largest verdict for excessive force in the history of this city in the Cox case, even you, Mayor Hales, said you disagreed with the jury. And, you know, there were a video showing 6 punches and 4 tases within, you know, a matter of seconds on that. And that caused a great amount of public outrage. And I think that this is not the right time for the city council to be taking a step back at all in this agreement. I think it's time for us to say, let's get the judge. And I think the key will be that we'll have a better chance for the DOJ to step in as a party if things aren't being implemented, if there's a public hearing with Judge Simon where he's getting to ask questions. I think that's the reality of how it all worked out.
Mr. Kafori, doesn't the DOJ automatically have that ability? I mean,
they're a party
to the agreement.
They do, but I think if there's a public hearing where the judge is asking questions, I think the DOJ is going to feel a lot more public pressure to step in if they don't think things are being done than if those aren't happening. And I don't see, again, back to the council, what the rationale is for appealing this. I mean, is it a waste of resources to have the hearing?
So, Mr. Porter, it sounds like you're saying that the purpose of having the hearing will be to put pressure on DOJ to say that we're not complying with the agreement,
even if you're really not.
Even if that's not really what they believe.
Well, but that's the benefit of a public hearing, is to allow everyone an opportunity to be there and watch what's happening. And as is, I don't see, again, any rationale why we should not have such a hearing. And I think it would put pressure. The DOJ has got their agreement here. Let's look at this, you know, in hindsight. They're going to be looking at other cities. They're going to be looking to enforce this in other cities. They're not going to have this at the forefront of their radar. And having a public hearing with a judge asking the tough questions about things, I think, would be very helpful for them having to refocus on the Portland case over and over again.
But actually, don't you think that the DOJ will actually be more involved on a week-to-week, month-to-month basis in overseeing this agreement than the judge? And don't you think the judge, if he's coming in once every 6 months or a year, will be kind of parachuting in and perhaps tempted to say things or do things based on minimal information?
I think that the DOJ, I think the final agreement was pretty weak in terms of police reform. And I think a lot of the citizens feel that way, too. And I think that's where the lack of community support for the DOJ is coming from. And that's why I think having a neutral, somebody who's, you know, not involved in any of this and has no public pressure and is not elected and doesn't have to take campaign contributions, having that person who has become intimately knowledgeable in all of this stuff over the last few years, having Judge Simon play a key role in this is essential. And again, I don't see a reason why we shouldn't have it.
If the agreement wasn't good enough, don't you think Judge Simon should have thrown it out?
Yes, I advocated for that. But he went ahead and implemented it, and he had a very minor requirement, an annual hearing, so we can discuss and see how it's going, that the public could be at. And I don't see any reason why we shouldn't have that. And going through years and years of appeals and having city attorneys fight this out is crazy.
Mr. Kavir, can you think of a situation in the relationship between the federal government and a local government where a lawsuit is filed, a settlement is reached, and the parties stay in court for an indefinite period after that?
I can't think of something off the top of my head. I know they've done this, I think, in four other cities where they've had implementation agreements and the judge has been the ultimate.
That's because there was a special master appointed. I'm saying, can you think of any instance outside of even a matter like this in the relationship between the federal government and its judiciary and a local government where you go to court and then you stay in court?
But that seems bizarre
to me.
Okay.
So, Mayor,
we have not gotten police reform done right in decades. Right. And I think the fact the DOJ came in is a statement to that. And the fact that they want to stay involved is helpful, and I think having this case remain as a case, and as I understand it, it's basically in abatement, but if things aren't being implemented, it could be reactivated at any point. I think that's a beautiful thing. That's exactly how it should be. I can't think of another example.
I can't either. Yeah.
I can. School desegregation, there are many cases that were like what you're describing. I grew up in Boston in the late 60s and early 70s, and that was exactly how it went.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Ng, welcome.
Hi, City Council, great to see you. Saltzman, Hales, Fritz, and Novick. My name is Mary Ng. I want to go really fast. I've made you a really wonderful packet, so I'll be leaving that with your clerk so you can have that. I wanted to point out that you are not the dictator, just so we have that clear, and that the police of Portland are not a secret police. They are a public service. Just so we have that clear. I'm very concerned about the Rachel Andrew lawsuit regarding the male masturbation gesture that Chief Reese reaffirmed the harassing incident in a hearing with her and with some of your city attorneys. I'm concerned about Landrum's courtroom demeanor. He's very, very rude. He's very aggressive. I think he kind of dropped the ball in the Cox case. I think he's getting tired of the Kavouris, honestly, because he can only be so nasty and so unprepared. And I wanted to let you know that Yamashika came in and gave me a handshake, and I kind of took it as a symbol of good faith that maybe we really do want to work across the aisles, that it's not an us and them situation. And I think I've never heard him speak. He's the quiet type, but I have a feeling he might be a better representation of this city, because when you throw somebody up there who's going to victim blame and get very nasty with someone like Elizabeth Nichols in the pepper spray case, you misrepresent the city and misrepresent our intent to be in compliance with the Constitution and with our civil liberties. I definitely want to hit the point of Mary Claire Buckley. Her conduct was very, very bizarre and disturbing, and thanks to Max Berenstein for reporting on that. I found it strange that the police hired her for implementation. I wanted to bring up the Kruger thing. It's got us as like a neo-Nazi website tour guide for great cities to be a neo-Nazi. We're making it into the neo-Nazi blogosphere with our irresponsible attitude towards Kruger. So that, to me, is very concerning.